Good afternoon, and welcome to yet another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. My name is Paul Scalney, and I'm here at Lakeside Cafe in Columbia Town Center with my co-host, Dennis Lane. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by today's guest, Greg Hamm, Senior Vice President at GGP and the Manager of Columbia. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the increasingly absurd stories making news today. Dennis, what you got?
You started off, Paul. You gave us, we had three key words of our news stories this week. I think they were sprinklers, porn.
Well, my theme for the day was porn, proms, and sprinklers.
Porn, proms, and sprinklers, yes, PPS.
So,
and the porn you're referring to, of course, is the, once again, the county has decided to go after a pornographic bookstore, this time in North Laurel. The other one was up on Route 40, the Pack Shack, and it got started this whole thing. And once again, they end up with egg in their face because the porn shop knows its way around, knows the law actually better than the county, apparently.
Well, I just love the fact that, you know, the county sent in an inspector on March 2nd, and they actually took the time to count 1,601 DVDs, 354 videotapes, 3,278 paperbacks, just to determine that less than 20% of the items sold were inappropriate.
Tough job.
It is a tough job.
I don't suppose he had to watch them or
no. I don't know.
Well, won't go.
Sounds like great tax dollars at work.
Sprinklers. Now, you and I have both in the last 5 years have built homes in Howard County, and I'm sure that as part of that building of your home, you were offered the option of putting a sprinkler system into your home.
Dude, they offer everything for a price.
and I was as well. And of course, we declined,
right?
Because when we looked into it, there was no break on your insurance. There was really no benefit to putting a sprinkler. And all I could think about, if we put a sprinkler system into our house, me doing what I do, I would inevitably knock a head, or somehow we'd have a catastrophe and I'd have flooding problems more than a fire problem.
Well, in fact, and I don't know if this is true or not, but someone suggested to me that insurance companies actually pay out more dollars in insurance claims for damage caused by broken sprinkler heads than they actually do by fire that's not remediated through sprinklers.
Well, you know what this story is all about, and the reason why we're doing it is the unions. That's my opinion.
Well, Mary Kay, one of our council people, would have us think
who's been a guest on our show,
that it would be all about saving lives, because no life is worth saving a dollar.
I think it was, you can't put a price on a life.
Well, you can, but yet at the same time, they've exempted all of Western Howard County because they claim it's too expensive to put in underground pressure tanks. So I guess we value the lives in Columbia and where we have water and sewer, but we don't value the lives in Western Howard County where we have wells.
Well, yeah, that's true.
It's a stretch.
But there you go. So, and proms.
Proms. Ken Ullman, you got to give him credit. Master politician.
The man is a genius.
He is a genius. So the county has announced this week that they're going to be donating $2,000 to each of the county's 12 public high schools to defray the costs of after-prom parties.
The after-prom parties.
Right. After-prom parties.
Right. And actually, you know, it's funny because, as I told you, on the way here, as I was driving here, Ken Ullman was on the Kojo and Andy show on WAMU in Washington, and this very thing came up. You know, apparently they have Reservoir High School approached the county and said, you know, can you help us with our after-prom party? And, of course, he can't just help one high school. And of course, Ken said, well, you know, we have budget pressures and we don't know what we can do. And they got together with the police chief, and I guess they have this money that they take from drug dealers.
Well, and I love the way they described it. The county announced that they're going to use money and profits from the sale of items seized from drug dealers to help defray the cost.
Profits.
I didn't know government should have profits. If they have so much away in the profits, how about cutting taxes?
Well, as I said, I'm a prophet, so there you go. You know, and speaking of profits, and while we're on the subject of schools, one of our school board members was in the news again. Alan Dyer, who, and I say this, you know, I'm always hesitant of flaming somebody, but when somebody says that private property is a sham issue, I got to call them out on that. The folks, the Carroll family, of course, has owned DeRagon Manor for close to 300 years. I mean, it's one of the longest privately held properties in the country. At 1727, I think the house was originally built, still in the Carroll family. And now, of course, there's this controversy. They want to develop the property and so they can get some money for preserving the property. And Alan Dyer and some other local crazies think that you can't leave it up to the Carroll family to take care of this. We ought to have an act of Congress to come in and tell the family what to do. For 300 years, they've done a pretty damn good job of
it. So what Dennis is obviously referring to is that Alan Dyer has now suggested that Congress step in and take over
private property.
For the benefit of preserving the historic value.
And if anybody wants to know how good Congress is on keeping their words on preserving property, they ought to talk to the Indians.
Yeah, and then there's that.
Anyway, we have a guest today.
Speaking of crazies, our guest today is quite familiar with some of those crazies out there.
Yes. He certainly has. He's been up close and personal with a lot of the more vocal personalities in our community.
You're being so kind.
Greg Hamm, welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
You know, and before we get started, I got to ask you because, you know, we're talking local politics and punditry and people, but what everybody around here is talking about is basketball. You know, we're heading into the tournament weekend, and while I don't know, everybody that I know of will be watching the ACC tournament this weekend, I imagine you'll be focusing on the Pac-10 tournament?
Well, I will be watching some Pac-10 basketball, but I have to say that it is awfully fun to watch Maryland and how they're playing. What I do like about local basketball is how many teams end up in the tournament made up largely of local talent. Yeah. So they recruit, as my father said, they don't even have to get off the bus to do their recruiting trips.
Right. Well, and of course, and Maryland has a distinction over ASU, which is your alma mater.
That's yes,
right,
it is.
I bought the Pac-10. Maryland actually beat Duke.
Yes, they did. Thanks, Dennis.
But that's not why we're here. Greg, you are driving the general growth effort to redevelop Town Center Columbia and actually breathe new life into really what has been a stagnated development here in Town Center since the days of the Rouse Company. Talk a little bit about that. About where we are. We've passed the enabling legislation CB 58 and 59, and we're in a limbo period now.
Right. Well, first of all, it's been a remarkably memorable professional experience to come into this community and be a part of this.
And then there's that.
And then there's, in all seriousness, I came here with. What I thought was some understanding of Columbia, and I have a entirely different appreciation of it now. But the vision of Jim Rouse and the people committed to that vision is something that is unique in America, unique in the world, and I'm honored to have been a part of it. We did get the legislation passed recently as a community, and I think it was a watershed event. I think it enabled us to. Enabled Columbia to begin to really think about its future again. And that's kind of odd because it's a relatively young community, but it focuses almost, it had been focused, I think, disproportionately on its past.
You know, when you, I just want to follow up on that, you said you had some preconceived notions of Columbia. What were those?
Well, I had spent a lot of time in Reston. So I, you know, Reston was a contemporary of Columbia in its beginnings, mm-hmm. and so I envisioned it having many of the same thoughts or many of the same principles and characteristics of Reston, when in fact it was quite different. Reston, I think of as more of a pure planning success and exercise. Bob Simon, who's a wonderful guy, who's sharp as a tack. He was there, Jim Rouse. Robert E. Simon is Reston.
Right.
And you should have him on your show one day. He's delightful still. But he was a pure planner. Jim Rouse was a Renaissance man and a social thinker and just a remarkable human being. And I knew Rouse people. I knew, you know, I saw the later Rouse Company, and I didn't. It took me a while to really understand who Jim Rouse was.
Let me ask you this: these preconceived notions, they must have in part been based upon your two predecessors' experiences and the many, many years leading up to you taking over this position. You knew it was going to be a difficult task. Was it as difficult as you thought? Was it more difficult? What were the challenges that you, I guess, expected versus the ones that really took you by surprise?
You know, it's funny. I actually was. It was pretty much what I expected. It was very much what
you
I expected.
You did your homework.
Yeah. Well, and it has a number of similarities in Reston, and I guess the difference is the number of original families who bought into the vision in Columbia is enormous. Reston, you've got a much smaller group of that.
More transient, would you say?
I think fewer people moved to Reston for the vision.
Mm.
You have a lot more people here that came here because of the ideal of Columbia, and they stayed. And as I said somewhere, you know, in business school, they'd say you're very successful brander if you can get a customer to tattoo your logo on their chest.
Right.
And people that moved here really did, you know, it was that level of commitment of loyalty to move your family and buy into this idea of how America would evolve in the era of the automobile.
Post-World War II. I actually have the people tree on my chest.
Spare us.
So where do we go from here? The enabling legislation passed. And maybe it would be appropriate at this point to stop and create sort of a list of definitions, because there are all these acronyms that are being thrown around. And I think for the benefit of our listeners, you know, we've got TIFs.
SEPAs.
We've got APFO. These are all things that we still – or obstacles that still need to be overcome. Can you speak to some of those, and what do some of those things mean?
What's a SEPA?
Sure. Well, I guess first of all, where we go from here, I think it was such a positive event because it had taken a while to get here. And I think some of that was the late Rouse Company's stumbles. And I think when we – I'm not sure GGP knew entirely what they were buying when they bought it with respect to the community's view of downtown. And so it took a while to get here. So the vote was a big deal. There is subsequent legislation that needs to follow on that will enable us to move to the next steps. And those include the Adequate Public Facilities Ordinance Amendment.
APFO.
That essentially governs the timing and the traffic and the public improvements that correspond with development. And we're introducing an urban setting for downtown so that Columbia isn't judged and gauged by the same metrics that Lisbon is in Howard County.
So the existing adequate public facilities ordinances don't really match what the plans are for
Correct. It's an entirely rural standard. So this is the idea is to grow smart, concentrate our people and our activities in an area that all over the country people seem to be preferring. So we have that. Your earlier question about a SEPA, that's a really bad acronym that came up in the course of this discussion. And it stands for Community Enhancements, Programs, and Public Amenities.
So who came up with an acronym?
I think it was a committee.
Okay.
It's so bad it was done by a committee.
And then there's that.
Yeah. And in Virginia, they call these things proffers, but I guess that's not an acceptable word in Maryland. So that's what a SEPA is. And what they mean are the public improvements that the master developer will be providing as development occurs. So they include things such as redoing Merriweather Post Pavilion, creating the housing trust fund, implementing cultural amenities, public art, things of that nature. All those are generally tied into these SEPAs.
When we talk about the public art and things like that, these are going to be funded by the developer. These are not the taxpayer. And where I'm getting at is there's some folks that aren't happy about the outcome of the council vote. And they've actually mounted a petition drive to submit this to referendum. I think mostly on the housing number. But the group, interestingly, is calling themselves Taxpayers Against Giveaways. I'd like to speak to that. What's the government giving you?
Yeah, I'm still waiting to find that out too. I'd like to pass that on to the people in Chicago as soon as I know, because it'll help me internally a lot.
Nice big bonus for you, probably.
Yeah. There's a lot of work involved in building a community. A lot left to be done. The Things that, from a fiscal perspective, though, this project is a net positive to the county in any measure. I mean, I think you can use the most conservative assumptions, and if we shepherd our growth in one place as opposed to allowing it to sprawl into the western part of the county and over in Elk Ridge, the cost for a firefighter to go out and service a house is far greater if he has to drive 15 miles. If smaller area to patrol, a quicker delivery of service, more efficient, it's been demonstrated and proven in multiple academic articles, and the whole world gets it, that it's smarter to grow this way, fiscally far more important. And for us, the biggest challenge we have, frankly, is jobs. And we need to be, if we want a nice future for all of our citizens, including those who have now retired and will depend upon others to fund infrastructure and services, we need jobs. And the jobs now go where employers think they can attract and maintain a workforce that wants to be there.
Well, and jobs create a greater tax base. The employers that provide the employment for these people provide a tax base. And all that provides extra benefits, amenities for citizens. And I think that's perhaps one of the big misnomers that they don't get.
And the four Rouse principles of Columbia, some say, well, he put making profit last. And the thought, you know, he was smart because he understood that it's all integrated. It's not a, you know, by definition, it's a holistic approach to community building. And if there's not economic sustainability built into the fabric of a community's growth, then you have a very poor future.
Let me go back to Dennis's question about this perception out there amongst some of the people mounting a challenge to the passage of 58 and 59, that this is going to cost the taxpayers substantial dollars. When in fact, it's the new roads, the pedestrian crossing, and significant contributions towards public transportation that really
and housing
and housing mm-hmm. that GGP is really paying for. And I hate to sound like I'm sort of advocating for GGP here, but those are the facts, are they not?
Yes. I mean, the county did a very thorough fiscal analysis of this project. The Economic Development Authority did a separate one that looked more globally. And in all cases, the growth was net positive. The county realizes that no matter what happens downtown, traffic is going to be increasing here. People will either be driving through Columbia in order to get to their jobs in BRAC and Fort Meade, or they're going to be originating here and maybe working here and driving less. So we either capture that and grow, or we just provide the services. So, you know, nearly all of most of the roads included in the project we will be building. And I think there's a fundamental point of departure, which is our company, HRD, Rouse before us, built all the roads, all the schools, you know, all the land for the schools, all the infrastructure, all the water, all the sewer. So we've built most of it, and this is kind of an infill situation. So in all scenarios, the development pays for itself.
You know, I don't know if you've actually put a dollar figure on it. I mean, we talk about Meriwether renovation. We talk about the housing trust fund, what I've heard, like a $43 million housing eventually have a value of $43 million. And the public art component. Have you put a total dollar figure as to what that comes out to?
You know, it depends on when it happens and a number of factors, but it's significant. It's you know, it's well over $50 million over time.
Yeah, I was going to say
because the housing alone is that. So I mean, it's at least double what.
So about $100 million probably.
It could be in that range.
So back to the whole taxpayer. It's not taxpayers give away. The county is getting a substantial amount back. In return, I guess, for allowing they're saying the giveaway is the 5,500 housing units, but they're not really giving you 5,500. You already had some.
Right. There were a couple thousand, 2,000 that, you know, arguably we had. And I guess maybe the more important fundamental thing is there is no cap on any zoning whatsoever downtown except for residential. So the worst of all worlds for the people in Howard County and Columbia would have been for us to have started doing more office buildings and retail here.
It would be like boxes.
Yeah. It would be like what?
Big boxes. Yeah.
Exactly. And so do we want a future of contention and despair and litigation, or do we want a future of a community working together, building on a pretty remarkable but brief history? And I think the community has really rallied around the latter idea, and that's been great to see and be a part of.
Mm-hmm. All right. So speaking of litigation, so this the crazies that Dennis alluded to earlier, they have mounted.
Did I say that?
You did. They've mounted a campaign to put this whole matter on referendum next election cycle, and really believe that this is their way to get around a process that has taken years and years. What are you willing to speak to on that issue? What's your position on that? What's DGP's position on that?
Well, at least since I've been here, and I know Barb was here before I was working on it, but we have embraced as fully, I think, as could be embraced, the notion of community involvement in planning our future. And we did it in the form of countless meetings, well over 100 in about a year and a half, to try to understand every issue that people had and make sure we really got to the nub of the concerns of the community, and then tried to work through with the county and work through with the community what those solutions should look like. So we totally, this process has been, I doubt there has ever been a land use process more collaborative and more open to community involvement than what has just taken place.
And yet at the same time, the critics are saying this was rammed through and we're rushing to judgment.
Without discussion. Yeah.
Without discussion, I think.
And there's a bell curve, and there will always be some people who will not be pleased, and they have certainly their right to speak. We've listened, we've tried to understand what they've wanted, and we've done, I think, a larger we, the community really has come together, I think, with a unified vision. And I think the vast majority of individuals and leaders who have engaged in this process and been there have been heard and have been respected and will benefit greatly by the execution of the downtown revitalization plan.
Talking about benefits, I think perhaps one of the things that's been overlooked through this whole process is not how many units we're going to have or what is this going to mean to, congestion and transit. What is the plus? What is the upside to Howard County? What are all the things that are good that are going to come from this entire process? Can you speak to some of those?
Yes.
And we talked about some already. We talked about jobs and economic growth and housing.
It's, we don't have to go far to look at some remarkable places. And I had dinner in Silver Spring the other night, and Silver Spring 10 years ago was a very different place.
Yeah.
Silver Spring today is a place people want to be.
Right.
Retirees want to go there because they can walk to the grocery store, walk around, eyes on the street, it's safe. Young people, the Discovery Channel wants to grow there. Innovative talent wants to cluster there. The tax base has grown remarkably, and the cost of providing services there is very, very low. So Silver Spring is a perfect example of the types of benefits that downtown and Howard County could reap from a smart growth future. Conversely, if it doesn't embrace this rapidly, you're going to have a decaying core in the middle of your county with the edges, being very disparate and not connected. And I guess you'll encourage growth to go on all sides of you. And it's not a pretty future without a smart growth plan. So cultural amenities, Merriweather, arts, people, places where you can literally walk to work, live, work, play. Those places do work. Some say, what if your employer moves? Well, fair enough. But if you get enough critical mass here, as they did in Silver Spring, as they did in Reston, as they're doing all over the country now, Austin, Woodlands in Houston that we're a part of, the critical mass begins to create this environment that thrives, a 24-hour environment, and the tax base goes up. You know, all property values around it improve. Your ability to provide services is enhanced. It's a net win.
You know, there's been some criticism, says, you know, again, the same people that say what the Rush are saying, that, well, there won't be any new commercial space built because the capital markets, you know, that there's no money for this type of development. Can you speak to that a little bit? I mean, we're hearing some different rumblings out there from Wall Street right now about that.
Yeah, well, the capital markets are horrible right now for development, but they're money's starting to come back, and it's it probably left the market irrationally with a panic after the collapse of Lehman Brothers, and I think it's starting to come back. And when it does come back, we as a community should like to be in a position to benefit from it.
Correct. Now, when speaking again to that, so when you would see, they're saying BRAC will be reaching its, or begin to peak and really feel the effect in 2011. And so when will we start to see maybe some shovels on the ground in town center?
Well, we're working through that process now and looking at the legislation that was just passed, which has a little different process than anywhere else in the county. And it takes a while to get through it. So hopefully we'll be able to break ground in 2012. But we need to work efficiently and intelligently to get there.
But you're working on those plans now. I mean,
yes.
Kind of to wrap up. Oh, I'm sorry,
but,
Paul.
But before you go there, I want to leave town center briefly. Jesse Wong's restaurant down here that closed last year. Now, that place is cursed. There have been so many restaurants in and out of there. You guys own that building, correct?
GGP? Yes.
Can you get the awning off the ground? You know, it felt like a month ago.
Yes.
This is the property management section of the show.
At the moment, we may not be as we may not be organized in a manner that is ideal for community building, but we're working on that. And I know that
Dennis and I have a couple free hours this weekend. We'd be happy to help.
We'll get the awning. I think we were there the night it fell.
You know, but it's funny that I love this case. People say, "Well, that space is cursed for a restaurant," but that's not true, because if you just go next door to Sushi Sono, the place is always packed.
No, I'm talking that physical
that
space.
Yeah.
Clyde's has done great. Tomato Palace has done great. Sushi Sono has done great.
But that space has like had five restaurants.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
More people downtown will help, undoubtedly help all the restaurants.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's true. So. Just kind of wrap up, they're part of the, and I know you can't speak to this a whole lot because there's the whole bankruptcy courts and everything, but part of the scenario for general growth going forward has been this this talk of splitting the company into two companies, General Growth Properties, which will be kind of the mall core company, and this other company that they're calling General Growth Opportunities, horrible name, by the way, General Growth Opportunities for the new company. Now, presumably, if you create a new company, that new company would need to be headquartered someplace. Has there been any discussion? I mean, GGP owns a great headquarters building right here in Columbia. Any chance that we could see the master plan communities be headquartered?
One never knows. One never knows.
Spoken like a true politician.
I think.
Did you know Ken Allman?
I mean, I know Ken well.
You have any money for proms?
I couldn't try to compete with Ken in any way. We're just thrilled at the progress that the company has made in the last year and a half.
And I personally thank you for it.
you're one of those. Yeah, I have a lot of friends that have done that. So the leadership that the community or that our management team has shown in doing this is just not only stunned in a very good way those who have watched it, but the judge and the investment community. I think nobody envisioned such a comprehensive victory in this process, and actually the entire capital markets are benefiting from it. Right. So it's great.
From 36 cents a share a year ago to 14 something a share today. I
mean, and then you read the articles and they say, well, because of this, there's more optimism about real estate and hope and everything
else.
So it's just a great, they've done a great job. And the important thing that I was going to say to that is they gave us, I didn't know them, brand new folks, they gave us their word over a year ago that we're going to finish the Columbia zoning process. and we're committed to that. And we pretty much stopped everything in the entire country, you know, lots of projects, and we kept this one going. They've done everything that they said they would do, and I'm very optimistic about our future.
I think that's a lot of credit to you and your team here, too. So
thank you very much.
Well, thank you for coming, and we hope to have you back sometime after we get some shovels in the ground and see this thing moving forward.
Well, this is a lot of fun. I'd be delighted to come. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. We appreciate it. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
What's your name?
My name is Barbara Nicholas.
Barbara, so have you heard that the county announced this week that they're going to be giving $2,000 to each high school to help defray the cost of after-prom parties?
Well, I hadn't heard until I heard you guys talking about it.
What do you think about that?
Well, I am not a parent, so I immediately took the $2,000 times the X amount of high schools, and I thought, okay, for what? $25,000, which is a drop in the bucket to the county. I think it's goodwill.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a nice weekend.
Sure. Hi, your name?
Hi, I'm Kathy Witte.
Kathy, have you heard about the story about the Howard County government giving $2,000 to the high schools for their prom parties?
I have.
Do you have kids in the Howard County schools?
I do. They're both in elementary school.
So someday they'll be in high schools.
Wrong kind of prom.
What do you think about that program?
Right now, I would disagree with the spending of that money.
And what would you rather see that money spent on?
Well, I know it's coming from a different budget versus education versus possibly fixing all the potholes or curbs that were smashed by the plows and things like that. But I think if you need to keep it in education, there's a lot of programs that can be put into place with helping special ed kids or possibly the English as a second language.
Let me just play devil's advocate. If your kids weren't in elementary schools and they were seniors in high school, would you think maybe differently about this year?
You're probably right. I would think about it differently. But if I go back to when I was in high school, I probably would not have attended a high school planned function. I would be doing my own party.
Thank you. Hi, what's your name?
My name's Beth.
Hi, Beth. We just had a little discussion about this. Howard County is going to be giving each high school $2,000 for their after-prom parties. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, when I was in high school and went to prom, you know, I would have liked having that money. But right now, with the way the economy is, I think that money should be spent on other programs for the schools.
Did you have an after-prom party?
I did.
Did they put everybody in, like, a theater for the entire night or something?
No, we actually were at a bowling alley. So they did a nice little bowling party for us, and it was lots of fun. We had to fundraise for it so that we could have our after-prom party. But I understand some schools don't have the money for those parties, and these kids should be able to celebrate and enjoy their accomplishments.
Did you go to high school in Howard County?
No, I did not.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Carver Center for Arts and Technology in Baltimore County.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Go Carver. That about wraps up another episode of And Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Paul Scowney, we'd like to once again thank Michael and Min So for allowing us to commandeer this corner of their Lakeside Cafe in Columbia Town Center on a Friday afternoon for the podcast. We'll be back again on March 19th with special guest Dick Story, the CEO of the Howard County Economic Development Authority, and we hope you'll join us then.
Dennis, have a great weekend.
You too, Paul.